This is the Eterol R9 recorder, a very small, lightweight, battery-powered by batteries that you can remove recorder, whose menus do not wrap. In any case, even submenus, main menus, none of them, they just stay where they are. And there are not that many of them. You could memorize these pretty easily, and if you didn't want to memorize them, you could certainly write down some crib notes and keep them. I'm going to go down to turn off the bathroom fan, down the downstairs bathroom, and I am only walking around like this because that way you get a sense of how it sounds in various noise environments, etc. Size of the recorder. If you are a Bookport user, and even if you aren't, it is about the same size as the Bookport. It's not quite as wide, maybe about as tall from the button side to the side where the belt clip is on, but it's not as long. If you line the bottom of each unit up, the Bookport and this recorder, this comes up to about midway of the top row of buttons. So it's almost as long, but not quite. And I'm going to slam this door. I'm on automatic limiter, and we'll see how that sounds. Let me also go out on the deck, where there might be a bit more wind, and see if this picks up wind. Of course, now that I said there was wind out here, there is none. Traffic off in the background. This recorder is quite accessible. It does have a lot of things that you can do with buttons. And when I get back inside, which I think I'll do now and stop playing around out here, I'll go through some of the buttons, some of the things I wanted to say. The first of which is that what I was led to believe by reading the manual is that when you put in a card for the first time, you have to format it. And I didn't know whether that meant you had to format it in the recorder, and if so, how did you get to the menus to do it, unless you knew the menu structure, or whether you could format it on the computer and then put it into the recorder and have it work. And guess what? You can. I formatted it. As long as the card is formatted, no matter how you format it, when you put it in, it works. It shows file number one as being blank, and you just press record once to go into standby, press record again to start recording, and you're recording. And there's no file that I can find on the recorder, like there is on a lot of recorders, that are not file names. So it's basically just a list of names of files, starting with R9, whatever number. So it is a right-out-of-the-box recorder. You just pick it up, turn it on, and go. By the way, I'm in a very quiet place. Let me close the door so it's even quieter. I'm in my studio. And if you have really good speakers, you will notice that there is a certain amount of hiss with these microphones. It's either the mics or the mic preamp, or both. But we'll be using some different microphones. And what I'm actually going to do at some point in this podcast is to play a part of a recording I made with the MicroTrack and its internal microphones, as well as a part of the recording that Rob made on the R1 with its microphones, to see how this compares with the two of them. But on to other things first. One nice thing about this recorder is a very small but significant thing, and that is the bottom has these little tiny rubber feet on it. Most recorders do. I don't believe the Olympus do, at least mine doesn't. And these are very tiny, but they keep the recorder from sliding very easily along the table. The switches on the back are very small. We'll get to them later, but they're obviously smaller than the little feet. So let's talk about how this thing is laid out. On the front, top part of the front, is the display. It's not a very big display. My wife doesn't seem to have any trouble reading it, however. Below the display are three little round buttons, one on the left, one on the right, and one in the middle. The one on the left is the Finder button. And what one does with this button is to press it, and you go into the file list, so you can find your files. Now, you don't have to do that, because you can just arrow through them with the right and left keys, as you would on a CD player, or Olympus, or whatever. I don't know a lot about what you do in the Finder, whether you can set up, I think you can set up different folders, etc. I'm not that familiar with it yet. The middle button is Reverb, the only effects feature left over from the R1. I don't know if it works in Record or not. Let's try it. Well, it would appear that it does not. It works in Playback, and there are various settings. You press it once, you're in the first setting. You press it again, you're in the second setting. You press it the third time, you're in number 3. Ultimately, you get back to no reverb. I don't know what the names of these reverbs are yet, but you can tell what they sound like. And I don't believe there's a way, at least my cursory looking through the menu tells me that there's really not a way to add or decrease the amount of reverb. That's something that I have to check on. And the right-hand button is Repeat AB. I haven't tried that. I gather it's some kind of repeat function for playback, which I really don't know much more than you do at this point. As you see, I'm learning as I go. Now we get to the transport layouts. What you have is a square. The top part of the square is up, the bottom part is down, the right is forward, and the left is back, and the center, an indented button, is record. So, with regard to files, up is play, down is stop. Right takes you one file to the right, or one file further into the list of files. Left takes you back a file. If you're playing a file and you hold down the right and left arrow keys, it scans through the file. If you press the key once quickly and release your finger, let's say you press the right-hand key, it takes you to the next track. If you press the left key, it takes you to the beginning of the current track. So to get to the previous track, you have to press the back arrow, the left arrow, twice. Pretty simple layout. In menus, they work the same way. Up arrow and down arrow is top and bottom. Right and left arrow is right and left. And we'll talk more about menus later. It's a pretty simple menu setup. And as I said earlier, they don't wrap. Now let's change to the buttons on the side of the recorder. On the right-hand side at the top, you have a volume. Well, first of all, you have the headphone jack, which is actually not tremendously easy to find. You can do it, but there's a lot of raised printing or writing on the side of the machine, and the buttons are raised. So the headphone jack is a little hard to find. It is, however, the first thing you come to after you feel down from the microphone, and we'll talk about the microphones in a bit. Below the headphone jack is a volume up button, and below that is a volume down button. And below that is the hold button. Up is on hold, down is not. Now, what's a bit confusing about this hold button is that above and below the hold button are the words hold and not hold, or on and off, or whatever, I'm not sure which. But the printing almost feels like buttons. It feels like little gnarled ridges that you should be able to push up and down. And at first I thought one of these was the hold button, but the hold button is sort of in between those, a little tiny button which you almost have to do with your fingernail. On the left-hand side, we have the power button at the top, and it's a line that starts just below the left microphone and goes down to a round button that you press. So it's kind of a long button, but you press the round part, which is maybe half an inch, three-quarters of an inch down, and you press that and hold it in for half a second, and the recorder powers up. And you do hear a pop in your headphones when it powers on, and so you know that you're on. And you're immediately ready to play, record, or do whatever you want to do. Below the power button are volume up and volume down for the microphone inputs. Pressing in on the up button will raise the volume level. Pressing down on it will lower the volume level. There are 30 clicks between the top volume and the bottom volume. Now, I've just discovered something by playing with this, and it was my theory to begin with. I'm in AGC mode. So, while we're in AGC mode, what happens if I talk really loudly? Well, it seems to be doing okay. However, it's an AGC that seems to do two things. It's a compressor. So it limits the top. So if you talk really loudly, it appears to knock it down or to not turn the volume down. It also seems to some extent, bring up the bottom, so that if you're not talking very loudly, it raises the volume, which actually increases the noise of the preamps. So if I turn the limiter off, which I'm going to do now, it sounds to me in my headphones as though I'm at about the same volume, but I've gotten rid of some of the hiss or microphone noise or microphone preamp noise, one or the other or both. So one thing you can do is to figure out where you want the volume, set it there, not use the AGC, and probably have a quieter recording. On the other hand, the AGC is there when you need it. For example, during the next part of this discussion, I'm going to walk out to the kitchen and walk outside, and we'll turn the AGC on because I'm not sure what's out there. There might be a loud sound which, if I don't have the AGC on, it might distort. In fact, let's go in search of a loud sound to see how this AGC works. I just turned it back on, and in the headphones at least, I haven't heard the actual output of the tape yet. Let me get the headphone cord out of the way here. It sounds more noisy. So I'm going to go outside of the studio here. Well, I was about to forget to describe the rest of the buttons for you. Oh, there's one more thing on the side before I forget it. Below the down volume is a little gnarled strip that again looks like a button, but it's the cover for the AC power. And you have to put your fingernail under the bottom of it and pull it up. It's a little piece of rubber that doesn't come off. One end comes up, and lo and behold, there's the hole for the power supply. On the top of the unit, on the left-hand side as you face the display, is the microphone input, and on the right is the line input. Let me go out into the other room, now that I've got the AGC on, and while I'm looking for something to drink, let me tell you about how you change the batteries and what's inside the battery compartment. And that is going to be a slight problem, I think. The battery compartment is on the bottom of the unit. That's the only thing that's on the bottom. And what you do is you slide the bottom of the recorder toward the back of the recorder. So, for example, if you're facing the front of it, you would slide the back portion away from you. Slides pretty easily as long as you don't have batteries in it. And we'll get to that in a second. You slide it out and it stops. And there's where your SD card goes in. And what's nice about the SD card is that, like the milestone, it's spring-loaded. So you push it in until it clicks. Now it'll stop before that, but it will only give you minor resistance. And if you push it a little harder, you have to be careful because you want it to go in straight. But when it goes in most of the way, it gets to a stopping point. And if you press it harder, it goes a little further. And if you keep pressing until you hear kick and it stops, then it's clicked in. And to get it out, you simply press it again and it releases itself and comes out a bit, so that you can grab it and pull it out. The other thing in this compartment that you've opened so far is the USB port. So you open the bottom, connect your USB. Now, Now, here's where the trouble starts. To get to the batteries, there's this tiny, tiny little slide button on the bottom of the unit, which is kind of hard to find because it's down there with all kinds of other writing. But it's a thing that moves when you push it. It's about in the middle of the bottom, and it moves to the left slightly. And what you have to do is push on that lever until it moves, pull the back out a little further, and then it releases itself and swings totally up at right angles to the back of the recorder, so that if you're holding the recorder so that the microphones are on top and the bottom is pointed down, then this battery compartment is now 90 degrees with relationship to the recorder. And lo and behold, there's your battery compartment. Now, closing this is an interesting problem. Even my wife Ginevra had trouble with this. And I'll have to play around more with it. But there is a subtle combination of when you press the slide button, because you have to press it to release the mechanism so it can close again, and when it then goes back into place, flush with the bottom, it is in the position that it was when you first pulled it out to get to the USB ports. And once it gets to that position, you then push it back in, and it closes all the way, just like it was before you opened it. I've just turned the limiter off for the AGC. Can't hear much difference out here, but, well, my goodness, it's lawnmower heaven out here. Well, let's go see if we can pick up a few lawnmowers and weed whackers and test this AGC. Well, of course, as soon as we wanted to go find the weed whacker, it stopped. But that's okay. We can do other things first. Let me talk now about the buttons on the back of the machine. If you're facing the back of the machine with the microphones pointing up, there are four buttons. Well, even if you aren't facing the back of the machine, they're still back there, Neil. The top left... Sounds like RF interference to me. I'm sitting here by my computer. I live, by the way, in a place that is very difficult to record in. We're very close to two TV stations and a radio station tower. And if I don't use balanced mics, can pick up some noise. And here is some. But it seems to be the only place in the house I've gotten it. And this is the internal microphone. So, all right, let's avoid that place. So, obviously, we're not totally free of interference. I was talking about the buttons on the back. The upper left is AGC. To the left is off, to the right is on. And the default is off. It comes in the off position. The top right button is mono stereo, with mono to the left and stereo to the right, and it comes defaulted to stereo, to the right. And you would use this if you wanted to record one microphone in both channels. The bottom left is a low cut filter, so you can cut off or turn off some of the bass. Let me try that and see how much it turns off. Oh, by the way, off is to the left and on is to the right, and it comes defaulted to off. I'm now talking with the low cut filter on, and of course there's not much in here that is of a noise that's really noticeable, so let me go outside again and see what's out here to record. The bottom right button is the high-low mic attenuation. High is to the right and low is to the left, and it comes defaulted to high. So let's go out here and listen to the birds. Oh, and there's some wind. And stand here for a minute and record ambient sounds. Now is a good time to describe the microphones. Now this is going to be interesting. Imagine that somebody took a cylinder and drilled through the top of this thing from left to right. If you run your finger up the right or left side of the recorder, you get to the top and you feel the end of the microphone, which is about the size of a... Well, here comes a something. Let's turn on some bass. The microphones are about the size of what? I don't know, half an inch, something like that. And there's a grid over the end. They're pointed straight right and straight left. As I said, it's like somebody drilled a hole through the top and stuck the cylinder in, and each end sticks out one to the right and one to the left. But these mics also have little slits in the front of them, or the part of the mic that's toward you. So there are two little slits in each mic, one on the right and one on the left, that sort of face you as you hold the recorder as though you're looking at the display. Let's turn off the bass again and see how much we get rid of. I don't know the actual frequency roll-off. That's buried in the manual someplace, and I haven't gotten there yet, but you can hear basically what it takes off. And now let's turn it back on. All right, so much for that. Now, although you certainly can hear that I'm talking in the left microphone and now the right microphone, they're close enough together that it's really hard to get a stereo separation. It's getting a little windy out here, so I don't know how long I can stay out here. Actually, I have a windscreen that came with my AKG 414EV microphone that fits over the whole top of this recorder and covers the mics. I may have to try to use that and see what happens. Here comes I thought there was a car coming. We were going to see how well it picked up right and left. But you can certainly hear that I'm right and I'm left. The mics are so close together that you don't get a really good separation. Ah, now here would be a test of the limiter. Let's go whack the wind chimes a good whack and see what happens. Well, that wasn't too bad. It certainly didn't distort. Go back in the house now and carry on with other things we want to talk about. Let's slam a few doors and see if that pegs the limiter. No, let's actually turn the limiter off and do that. Limiter is off. Now oh, my. Well, It's a pretty good limiter, it would appear. All right, let me spend a couple minutes talking about the menus, because they're actually pretty simple. In order to get into the menus, you hold down the finder for half a second or so, or longer if you want, because nothing will happen, to make sure the menus are up. There's no beep or anything that you get, so you have to make sure you hold it long enough. You come in on menu number one, which is recorder setup. And let me just read through the basic menus for you. There's one, recorder setup. 2, player setup. 3 is display setup. 4 is power manager. 5 is input setup. 6 is date and time. 7 is SD card. 8 is factory reset. Now, let's take an example and go into the first menu. You come in on recorder setup. By the way, these don't wrap, none of them. So, if you don't remember where you were, and you've done something in the menus, all you have to do is click up 2 or 3 times, at least 8. Now you know that you're at the top. It doesn't matter if you click more than that, because they aren't going to do anything. By the way, one of the things I forgot to mention about the up and down volume levels is that not only are there 30 clicks, and you can press them individually by click, 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 or you can hold down the up and down recorder input volumes, and you hear as they go through each stage of increase. Now it's or decrease, and it's too quick to count. But you do have some. In addition to hearing the volume go down, you do have some additional information about how far it's going down with the clicks. Okay, back to the menus. You come in on recorder setup. You press the record button to go into that menu. At that point, you're on sampling rate, and it defaults to 44.1. If you want 48, you simply arrow to the right. If you arrow again, nothing happens. If you want to go back to 44.1, you go left. If you arrow left again, nothing happens. So what if you want to change the bitrate? You go down one, and you're on bitrate. You come in on 16, go to the right for 24. Again, if you press it too many times, it doesn't matter. Go back to the left for 16, and there you have it. I'm not going to take you all the way through. It does a lot of MP3 things, and I haven't gone into them yet, and so you'd have to memorize what MP3 kbps you were on, etc. To get out of the menu from this point, you press the finder, which is the left of those three little round buttons. Now you've gone back one level in the menus, and now you're back at recorder setup. Press the finder button again, and you're out of the menus and back to where you can record. Now, I don't know what happens if you hold this down, whether you jump all the way out, or whether then because you're holding it down, you jump back in, because that's how you get into the menus. But I do know that so far I've only found two levels of menus. Now, that may not always be the case, but I think it is. So you'll never have to press it more than twice, I don't think. And if you're only in the first level just to do something, then you only have to press it once. So that is basically the menus and how they work. What about handling noise? This is a plastic case, and I'm holding it, rubbing it, not hard, but you certainly can hear it, but it's nothing near as noisy as some of the other recorders I've heard. So you can hold it in your hand without a whole lot of trouble. There are some accessories you can get with this recorder, one of which is a stand in which you set the recorder, and the bottom of the stand has a screw-on thread that actually fits onto a microphone stand. So this could become your stand-based microphone. There's a case you can get with it. It doesn't come with one. It comes with the power cable, the USB cable, a 64 megabyte SD card, and the recorder. And that's all you, and a manual and a few other sheets of information. The manual is available, by the way, in PDF format, and I'll see if I can find that and put it up someplace so people can get at it. Now, as I said earlier, you don't really have to do much when you start using this recorder for the first time. The manual talks about you must set the clock. Well, you don't really have to. You do if you want your file dates to mean something, because the incorrect date is going to be given now that I haven't set the clock. But that's the only reason I believe you would need to set it. If you don't care what your file dates are, then don't bother. The other nice thing about this, I don't know that I mentioned this, the play button when you're in record serves as the pause button. Now the question is, and I'm learning this as we go, I'm in the kitchen, you hear the refrigerator in the background, you can hear these buttons click. They have a very good feel to them. You know when they're pressed and when they're depressed. The question is the pause button instigated on the down press or the release? Because if it's instigated on the down press, then when you turn off pause, you're going to hear this pop. So I'm going to press this pause button in, count to three, and then let it go. If you don't hear me count to three, it's obviously going to operate on the down press. So here we go. 6, 7, 8. Now I'm out of pause. And of course I have no idea what happened because I haven't listened to the file back yet. Well, that was a bit confusing because what I didn't tell you I was going to do is when I took it out of pause, press it in and count some more, which obviously it got because it started recording on the down press and then you heard the click when I let the button up. So let's see how quietly we can do this. I'm going to pause and take it out of pause. All right, I'm now out of pause. So it's pretty impossible, I think, to get a silent pause. But if you're using an external mic, you're obviously not going to hear that. The reason you hear it now is because the microphone is very close to the button that you're pressing. The other question I have is, do the settings get lost when you remove the batteries? Somebody asked that on the list, and I don't know, because I haven't run out of battery power yet. But there are not many settings. Well, I suppose if you change the sample rate, that's one thing you might want to change. Otherwise, a lot of this is done by the switches on the back, so there's no really need to worry about settings unless, well, you could change stuff in the display where there's brightness, contrast, and power. Menu has how long the recorder will take to go to sleep. It's set on, I believe, 30 minutes. I have it now set to 5. Actually, I had my wife do that, but I'm sure I could learn to do it pretty easily by remembering what was in the menu and counting the number of clicks. And how do you know when your battery is about to run out? Well, now that's a very good question, which I don't have the answer for either, because I'm still on my first set of batteries. There's probably a light that flashes. The manual says you could ruin a recording if you run out of batteries, which, of course, the manual said that you had to set the clock and format too, so I'm not sure who to believe. That's something yet to be determined, folks. And in the case of a lot of recorders, they're smart enough to know when you're about to run out of batteries, and they pop you out of record. That would be infinitely better than just corrupting the whole file by dying in the middle of a recording. But we do not know yet. All right, since I'm not where I can record a lot of loud sounds, to test this limiter once and for all, or AGC as it's called, I'm going to turn on my computer, and I have the sound of a truck passing. And I'm going to play this back through my speakers very loudly. It's not at all like the real thing, but it's as close as I can get at this point. And we'll see how well this limiter deals with it. Now, I have some speakers that have as much bass as you want. I've got a big woofer. I have my speakers arranged and run through an EQ so that when I run a frequency sweep, it's flat all the way up. So it's a marvelous place to... Okay, that's my loon that says my computer's booted up. It's a marvelous place to listen to music or trucks passing. So let's go find the truck and see what it sounds like. Now, here's a good way to test the bass roll-off. What does it sound like with the bass roll-off switch turned on? Doesn't do a bad job. Now what I want to do is that thing I said I was going to do earlier about comparing Rob's recording of the R1 with my recording of the Microtrack and the R9. So first, here's a portion of something I did on a podcast in this same studio with the Microtrack recorder. Then I'm going to switch with no interruption to Rob talking about the Eterol on the Eterol R1, and then I'm going to switch back to this recorder and see if we can hear what, if any, difference there is between the quality of the mic sound and the kind of background noise we get. This is being recorded on the microphone that comes with the recorder, the Microtrack. It's a T-shaped microphone. sticks out to inch or so on both sides, has a little windscreen on each end of the microphone. Not very good for stereo, but it's a pretty good mic for what you would want to do with it.
I find the built-in mics to be quite good, but the lowest noise level you can expect to get out of this with the gain control all the way up using the built-in mics would be about negative 60 dB peak, unfortunately. So there's quite a bit of self-noise on the built-ins, which is probably decent for a unit of this type, but I would prefer that the self-noise be a little bit lower. If you turn the input level all the way down and record a essentially silence, you get a peak noise floor of about negative 75 dB, which isn't bad, but again, it would be nice to see a little bit better performance there as well. And this particular figure is why I recommend that people don't use this in 24-bit mode, because you still get this negative 75 dB peak noise level even in 24-bit mode. So the benefits of going to 24-bit mode would be perhaps a slight difference in quantization noise, but the noise floor is such that it provides basically a dithering effect and pretty much is going to wipe out any signals that are really low level.
Now, this is not a thoroughly scientific test, because I had to change the volumes between all three of us in that we were at different levels. One of the problems Rob had with the R1 is that it did not record at that high a level. So I had to raise his volume some and try just by listening to it to compare it with me, to compare it with this. So it's totally not scientific. However, this recorder seems to produce a great deal more volume. I haven't yet looked at the highest peak I get using the limiter, or the AGC, but I believe I'm going to find it a bit louder than the R1. Whether the microphones are any quieter, whether they're noisier, I won't know until you know, until we listen back to this. The next thing I want to do is use a couple other microphones. I'm going to do this like I did on the MicroTrack. I'm going to start with a recording of a very low-powered output microphone, the Audio-Technica AT-822 stereo microphone. I did this on the MicroTrack recording, and what I used at that point was a comparison recorded on a Sony mini-disc with that mic, and then switching to the MicroTrack. I'm going to do the same thing here. Sony is known for its quiet mic preamps. Let's see how much quieter they are, if any, than this. First, the Audio-Technica on the Sony, and then on the R9. And this is the Audio-Technica AT-822 microphone being recorded on the mini-disc MZR-900 recorder. It, too, has a limiter, and I'm using that. And now let's put the same mic on the Eterol R9 and see how much different the noise level is. And this is the Audio-Technica microphone being recorded on the Eterol R9. A little bit different in sound. One nice thing about this recorder is that you simply plug in a mic, an external mic, and it works. You don't have to go set internal versus external, etc., etc. You just plug it in, it goes. Now, this recorder does come with powered mics defaulted to off. That's not phantom power. We don't get phantom power with this recorder. We don't even get TRS. The power I'm talking about is the kind that a computer microphone might need, a headset microphone or a computer stick microphone, that draws power from the recorder in a limited amount. That is defaulted to off, and that is in input settings in the menu options. Well, let's unplug this mic and go back to the internal mic and see what the difference is. Now we're back to the internal microphone. The Audio-Technica microphone is very much like the Sony microphones that a lot of people use on podcasts that I've heard, the Sony 1-point stereo mics. Same kind of output, so that's kind of the same sound you're going to get when using those mics as well. Now, one of the things that Lynn Moskowitz at Core Sound has written up on his webpage, core-sound.com, is a very good description of the MicroTrack and its mic inputs. And, Lynn, if you hear this and I misquote you, please let me know. But what basically I think is being said is that the MicroTrack, and we'll see about this recorder and how it compares, the further up you turn the input gain on the mic level, the noisier the preamps get. So if you have a weak powered output microphone, like the Audio-Technica, that really isn't putting in a lot of signal, you're likely to get a lot of noise from the microphone and from the microphone preamp. If you're using a microphone that has a higher output or a louder output, you're probably going to have to turn the volume down, and you might even have to go to the lower mic attenuation switch position. But you're hopefully, as in the case of the MicroTrack, making a quieter recording because you are hearing more signal and less microphone noise. So, what I want to do now is to try this recorder with three different microphones, in addition to the one I've already tried. The Sound Professional's in-ear microphones, the Sound Professional's very good quality Audio-Technica microphones, which I have mounted in Crokies, and lastly, the DPA microphones, which I did buy from Core Sound, which is their high-end quasi-binaural mics. So, let me try to approximate the same volume I'm using here and try the in-ear microphones. I'm now using the Sound Professional's in-ear microphones. I have no idea how this sounds. I've turned the mic attenuation switch down to low. I don't know precisely what kind of dB decrease that is. 20 probably, 25, 30, who knows. I seem to have lost the windscreens to one of these mics just now, so I don't have the windscreens on, so I don't know if I go out here outside if we're going to get a lot of wind in the microphone, but let's see what the birds and the traffic sound like out here with the in-ear microphones and what kind of noise specs we get. Traffic off to my left, birds off to my left, not really much going on out here. One of the tricks I like to play when I'm doing limiter tests is to... lawnmower off to the right. It would be nice if a car came by, but I suspect none will. We could try the wind chimes again. Now, I don't know what the level of these microphones do relative to the limiter, because they weren't designed for this recorder as the internal microphone was. So this could be a real bad test, or not. All right, so much for the wind chimes. Now, I want to, let's do a few more little tests here. Let's go, do something like run some water in the kitchen sink, or the door is about to slam. And another door slamming, locking. Turn on the water in the kitchen here. Right panel, left panel, right panel. We could run the garbage disposal, assuming there's nothing in there that's going to get crushed. Isn't this scientific? What scientific person would think of running a garbage disposal? This is our made-up science. All right, this is the in-ear microphones. Now I'm going to switch to the Audio-Technica, and so help me, I can't remember or find the model number. It's a pair of a couple $100 Audio-Technica lavalier mics that Sound Professionals has made into quasi-binaural microphones, and you can clip them on, or you can put them in a pair of Crokies and wear them on your sunglasses, which is what I have done. So let's try these and see what the difference in the mics and the sound of the recording is. All right, these are the Audio-Technica mics. Let me go into a very quiet room in the house here. Now, I did hear some RF noise in the in-ear mics, and that makes me really wonder. I can't tell. I'm in a very echoey room, but it's very quiet unless we've got RF noise. Let's see how noisy these mics are. Of course, I won't know that until I listen back to them. And as I said, I live in a pretty bad place, but if these inexpensive mics and this recorder are going to start picking up a lot of RF noise, that could be a problem. Again, let's go out front, see what the situation is like. These are about the same level of the in-ear, except they're quieter. I think they're 66 dB signal to noise, and the others are, I don't know, 60 or 62 or something like that. Not much going on. Lawnmower off to the right. These are encroachers pointing forward, sort of above and in front of my ears. So they aren't quite as binaural as in-ear, but they're pretty good. They have windscreens you can fit on them if you want. And they're actually rather nice. All right, slamming door about to occur. Another slamming door. More running water and sink. Right panel, left panel, right panel, left panel. Garbage disposal, if I can reach the switch. Come on, Neil, at least. What would be nice, and so far it seems to be the case, that these microphones work on the lower mic attenuation with the AGC, which I have on. That way, well, let's just go see how the truck sounds. I was going to say that way you could have a pretty pleasant walk without worrying about being distorted, but let's see what the truck sounds like. And there you have it. And now we're back once again to the internal mic. Those aren't bad sounding mics. Oh, let me try one more set. I'm going to try the DPA mics, which have a little higher output and are very quiet. So let's see how they work. Now we're back in that quiet, echoey room again. And these are even quieter still. They're about 74 signal to noise dB. I have them mounted in a headband, or what looked like a set of headphones, one in each piece of the headphone, and cloth windscreens over them. And, I guess I can do the same test. This is getting kind of boring, but what's interesting is to see how well this works. I'm still on limiter with a number of microphones, and if I don't get a lot of RF noise, this limiter may be just the trick. Back outside, the cardinal's gone, the cars are gone, the lawnmowers are still out here but off someplace I can't tell where. So I might as well go back inside, play with the water. You know, we're just so scientific. I mean, what would a person want besides somebody playing in the water? Scientifically, here comes the door. Comes the other door. I won't be surprised if these are a little louder, but we'll see if these distort or peg the limiter. Here comes the water. Here comes the garbage disposal. Reach, Neil. Oh, better reach the other way. These mics sound different from the Audio-Technicas. The Audio-Technicas are much more treble-oriented than realistically they should be. And my telephone's been ringing all day long. Maybe someday I should answer it. All right, well, this is the end of this part of the test, and let's see what else we can find to do. Okay, I'm back on the DPA microphones. That was a very interesting test. I've raised the volume a little bit. I'm no longer on limiter. I think we finally have reason to use 24-bit, because if you listen really carefully to the noise of the preceding part of the file when I was using the DPAs, it was breaking up. It needed 24-bit, or dither. I'll have to check the level of the noise floor before I end this recording. It seems like it's lower than the R1, although I can't say that the mic preamps on the upper end or the internal microphone is any better. So with this louder sound, and knowing we're not on limiter and not wanting to distort things, I did want to give you a sense of some sort of normal volume that you could get out of this thing, because what happens when you don't have a limiter is you really do get an amazing dynamic range. The wind chimes peg this meter at zero. On the other hand, when I'm standing in the room talking, I'm way low. I'm out on my porch again. There goes a car. Oh, and it's raining. What else is new? All right, one other test I promised somebody I would do is a noise floor test. So what I'm going to do to... Well, I don't think that I can do it on mic input, because I think as low as it goes, the mics may still be on. I'll try it. Well, I measured the signal to noise both on SoundForge and Studio Recorder, and they give me slightly different measurements. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of minus 78 to minus 80 dB. The R1, according to Rob, was 75, so this is a little quieter, and quiet enough certainly to make those really quiet microphones need 24-bit, which is saying something. One thing I have noticed that either you like or don't like, and maybe you can set this in the menus, I don't know, but when you turn this unit off and you come back into it, you're at file number one. It doesn't stay where you left off. So you've got to arrow all the way through your files. Now the question is, let me check, can you go backwards and arrow around? Does that wrap so you can actually arrow around to the last file? Hold on, let me check. No, you can't. So, that's one little feature. Well, I think we've fairly well put this recorder through its paces, and I suppose now is a good time to summarize. A couple things. When I was switching back and forth between limiter and non-limiter and saying that non-limiter was quieter, I don't believe it was. I believe I just didn't have the volume exact. So, I don't think there's really any difference. I don't think this brings up the bottom all that much. It may simply be a top-end limiter rather than a compressor. Secondly, as I alluded to earlier, the dynamic range on this tape is pretty significant, because when you record with the kinds of microphones I'm using, with a recorder that allows this wide a dynamic range, even with its limiter, it's going to give you a very wide dynamic range. I have the limiter on now, and people can pretty much look at their meters and see where I'm going in terms of dB at this point, but I'm certainly not anywhere close to zero. However, when loud noises are created, the meter does go up to zero, and it has never pegged that I know of. So, I would say, all in all, the limiter is quite nice. What I'd wish for is an external microphone that you could put on the top of this that was much quieter than the internal microphone, or that had more power so that you could actually turn down the volume of the recorder, limiting the sound of the microphone preamps. So I'll do some research and see if I can find something like that. I don't know whether anything exists or not. Well, thank you for listening. This has been fun. I have not been as prepared as I often am, because I was learning as I went, and we sort of learned together. You can reach me at Neil, N-E-A-L, dot Ewers, E-W-E-R-S, at Ravenswood, R-A-V-E-N-S-W-O-O-D, dot org.